Well, over 10 years ago now, I went on a missions trip to the Philippines to teach preaching at the Bicol Center for Christian Leadership on the main island of Luzon in the southern portion of the Bicol region in a city called Legazpi. But for this event to happen, many obstacles had to be overcome. The first obstacle was the obstacle of distance. The Philippines is over 10,000 kilometers from here, and to get there involved a flight to Vancouver, a 14-hour flight to Manila, another flight to the southern part of the nation after a few days of waiting to overcome the jet lag. And then upon arriving there, we faced more obstacles. The obstacle of fatigue was one, not just in me, but for the students who were part of that class. The class was held every evening for 3 hours. And the students had been at their full-time jobs all day and so came to class already tired. Then we faced the obstacle of heat, and it was 34 to 37 degrees every evening with no air conditioning. And so by 20 minutes into the class, I would already be soaked with sweat and so had to continue and keep hydrated and work hard to keep the students' attention despite their obstacle to heat and fatigue. And then we face the obstacle of language, English being the second or the third language of many of the people in that region. And though some were very good with their English, others didn't know or understand as well. And so we struggle to understand one another. Yet by God's grace and your prayers and his power, we all persevered through those 2 weeks. The good work happened, but not without opposition and obstacles. And when you think about the good works that God has for you to do in your life or in my life, it seems that this is a common pattern. We set out to do the good work, and then there's some obstacle or opposition that rises up to prevent us from stepping forward. Think about wanting to spend time with the Lord in prayer, in reading his word, in abiding with him. Well, we can do that when we're motivated and when we have time and there's no other pressures pushing in on us, but try to spend time with God during the full-on everyday life full of pressure and deadlines and fatigue and distraction, along with the enemy's hard work to keep us from spending time with God. Such a good work faces obstacles. Or say you're in a relationship with someone and you want to increase the spiritual part of your relationship. But whenever you bring that up, your partner, your loved one gets angry or tells you, stop bringing that up. And so you're demotivated to move forward on this good work you think God is calling you to do. Or say you want to raise your kids to the glory of God. You want to teach them things like boundaries and respect for authority and self-control. But then parents of their friends want to go the complete opposite way. They want to take the path of least resistance. No boundaries. No curfews. No limits. And your child comes to you and says, why do we have all these limits when my friend can do all this other stuff? Or you want to honor God in your spending and cut back that impulse buying issue that you have, and then you go to the mall and there's another ad that tells you this is the deal of the century and you're tempted again to go a different way. Or you try to do your work for God's glory and you work hard and other people get mad at you for showing them up by your hard work. Or you do your schooling to the glory of God and yet someone else gets further ahead than you do because they cheat. And we try to regather and reconnect and invite others to this community for the sake of God's name this fall, but the pandemic and concerns and fear keep us from fully reconnecting. So how do you respond when you attempt to do a good work and you face opposition or obstacles? And some of us respond by giving up. We were okay with going forward on this good work as long as everything went smoothly, but as soon as there was obstacles, we just say, oh, forget it. And others of us might say, oh, here's an obstacle. I am going to gear up. I am going to do it all in my own strength, out of my own determination, and I don't care who gets in the way or who I run over, we're going to get this thing done. Or we find ourselves somewhere in between. Some days we're determined to keep going. Other days we just feel like giving up. How do you respond when you face opposition to do good work? There's a different way, another way between the extremes, if we call them that, of giving up or gearing up. And when God's people have used this other way, throughout history we have seen and we can experience overcoming obstacles to do the good work that God has for us to do. And as we continue in the study of the book of Nehemiah, we are going to see this in his life. Nehemiah was a follower of God who had a comfortable government position in the Persian emperor's court. Yet Nehemiah learned about the desperate state of his people in Jerusalem. They were living in a city without walls, with burned down gates. So with the emperor's blessing and with God's favor, he returned to Jerusalem and began this rebuilding project. Yet he faced immediate opposition from the local governors. They did not want Jerusalem to succeed. Yet many people accepted Nehemiah's call to join the good work of God. And last week, we saw the wide diversity of the people that joined in and joined together to begin this rebuilding project. But today, we pick up the story with the opponents stepping forward again to stop this good work. And we're going to see Nehemiah use the other way to respond to opposition to doing the good work that God has for us. First, we're going to see the different types of opposition that Nehemiah faced and how he responded to them. And then we'll see how we ourselves can apply this other way to the opposition in our lives to the good work God has for us to do. So if you have a Bible with you today or on your devices, please turn to Nehemiah chapter 4, and we'll be looking at verses 1 down to verse 14. So Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 to 14. Now, when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews. And he said in the presence of his brothers and of the army of Samaria, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that?" Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, "Yes. What are they building? If a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall. Hear, O God, our God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt and let not their sin be blotted out from your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders." So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. But when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem was going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed, they were very angry. And they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause confusion in it. And we prayed to our God and set a guard as a protection against them day and night. In Judah, it was said, "The strength of those who bear the burdens is failing. There is too much rubble. By ourselves, we will not be able to rebuild the wall." And our enemies said, "They will not know or see till we come among them and kill them and stop the work." At that time, the Jews who lived near them came from all directions and said to us 10 times, "You must return to us, So in the lowest parts of the space, behind the wall, in open places, I stationed the people by their clans with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. So what kind of opposition did Nehemiah face? And how did he respond to it? Well, the first kind of opposition he faced was verbal intimidation. Verbal intimidation. We meet Nehemiah's opponents again in chapter 4, verse 1, and they've heard about the progress on the wall. So they resort to a common tactic in an attempt to stop the work. They use discouraging words. They try to speak in a way that will discourage those who are attempting this good work. And in the presence of his brothers, we're told, and the army of Samaria, Sanballat asks some blistering questions. What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? And this question attacked the people's vulnerability, for they were feeble. Compared to the other nations around them, they were a defeated people living in a vulnerable city and had little strength in themselves. And when you try to do a good work and someone immediately attacks your area of weakness, it can cut deep and be discouraging. Then he asks, will they sacrifice? Will they finish it up in a day? And this probably refers to offering a sacrifice to God and thinking that God is somehow going to magically make the wall appear. It's like he's attacking their faith. And when we start a good work, the opposition may ridicule our ability to see the work through. For Sanballat and Tobiah knew this was going to take a lot longer than a day. So he mocks their ability to carry it out. And he also asks, will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that? And his friend Tobiah joins in the taunt and says, well, if a fox went up on that wall, it's so flimsy, it's so weak, the whole thing would come down. So here they're attacking both the building materials that they're using and their skill as builders. For they were using inferior building materials. They were using rubble to rebuild. And we saw last week that there were not many, if any, stonemasons who were doing the work. It was all volunteers. And they were rebuilding the wall the best they could, but it was certainly of lower quality than that would be built by stonemasons. So verbal intimidation through this mocking could have its effect. It can stop a good work from going forward. So how does Nehemiah respond? Simply with prayer and continued work. And we see Nehemiah's prayer in verses 4 and 5. First of all, he cries out, hear, O God, we are despised, revealing that those taunts in those questions hurt. They struck deep. They touched a nerve. We are despised. And then he goes on to pray, perhaps a very harsh prayer in our eyes. He prays not only for his enemies to be turned back and plundered, but for God to blot them out and not forgive their sin. It's like he's praying for their eternal destruction, which to us is incredibly harsh. And we know Jesus commanded us to pray for our enemies, to love our enemies. Yet Nehemiah feels a very serious threat here. And perhaps that explains the harshness of his prayer. For even if you look at the end of verse 5, you see another aspect to this threat. Notice he says, they, the opposition, have provoked you, God, to anger in the presence of the builders. Meaning that when Sanballat and Tobiah were asking these mocking questions, they were not only in one another's presence, not only in the army of Samaria's presence, they were in the presence of the builders, meaning they had come to Jerusalem. They were standing outside the walls so that the people could hear these questions. And the fear could spread. So Nehemiah cries out to God for help. But notice, he and the people continued to work. Verse 6, they continued on with the good work. In fact, they reached the halfway point of the project. The wall was coming up. And there's counsel for us here that when we face obstacles and oppositions, we can just stop working and think that God is going to have to do everything. Or we can pray to God and then continue to work on that which is before us. And that's what Nehemiah and the people do. They pray to God to deal with these taunts and then continue their work. But the level of intimidation is going to go up. And the second way in which the opponents try to stop the work is through physical intimidation or doing something to stop the work. So verse 7, but when Sanballat and the other opponents heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem was going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed, they were very angry, and they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause confusion in it. So once they saw that their verbal taunts failed, they decide they're going to have to do something. They're going to actively move to stop this work and cause chaos. And if we're involved in a good work and someone tries to discourage us with their words, yet we still go, still keep going, they might take another step in trying to stop us from going ahead with this good work. They might try to actually do something. Maybe they stand up to try to physically intimidate us. Maybe they break something. Maybe they storm out. Maybe they disappear for a while. Maybe they want to make the whole family or the whole workplace or the whole classroom suffer through their bad mood over a situation. Maybe they go further and gather signatures or gather allies or go to the police or file a lawsuit. The intensity rises to the next level. So how do Nehemiah and the people respond? Response 2, he prays for God's protection and he sets a guard for protection. So he does both. He realizes there is a need for protection here because the enemies are plotting to attack. So I pray to God for protection and I set a guard for protection. And when we face active opposition, we need to bring it to the Lord in prayer and take the necessary steps we can take. And I hope you're beginning to see the pattern of this other way, between giving up and between gearing up. And this shows up again, the pattern does, with the third type of opposition, which is bad news. In fact, Nehemiah receives three sets of bad news, or pieces of bad news. The first piece comes in verse 10, where he sees the people becoming discouraged. And they start saying, we can't do this. This is too much work. We aren't going to be able to carry this out. And so this discouragement is starting to settle among the people. And they're going to discourage each other with their thoughts. And then they receive the bad news of a surprise attack that's on the way in verse 11. Our enemies said they will not know or see till we come among them and kill them and stop the work. So now the threat level is heightened even higher. And Nehemiah and his fellow workers need to think about a surprise attack. And how are we going to prepare for that? But then there's a third bit of bad news that comes from the Jews who surround Jerusalem and live in the surrounding region. And we're told that they came to Nehemiah 10 times with bad news. 10 times, perhaps warning Nehemiah, the opponents are gathering, they're going to come. And with their statement, return to us, It could mean one of two things. Return and protect us because we too are feeling the threat from these opponents, or come out to us where you will have protection and leave Jerusalem behind, for you can't survive there. And bad news can really derail any good work that we undertake. I think of the Gospels when Jesus received the bad news of John the Baptist's death. And then Jesus went away to pray, to try to deal with the magnitude of this news. Or we're trying to do some good work, and we get news that threatens us continuing. Maybe our significant other announces, if we keep pushing this spiritual stuff in the relationship, they're going to end the relationship. Or the boss comes in to announce a review of our work because other employees have raised concerns about us, even though their concern is that we're working too hard. Or we've tried to walk more closely to the Lord, and then we find out that one of the things that we've been praying about and asking Him for comes back with a no. The bad news of no. And we wonder, why did I even bother to try to get close to the Lord when this could happen? So how do we respond? Or how does Nehemiah respond with or to the bad news? And response number three is he reminds the people of the great and awesome Lord and calls them to fight for one another. He reminds the people of the great and awesome Lord and calls them to fight for one another. And that's verse 14. And I looked, and I arose and said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for one another. So Nehemiah addresses the people's fears. He addresses the bad news. He exhorts them to not fear because of the great and awesome Lord. He exhorts them to fight for one another. And the rest of the chapter explains the precautions that were taken to stand guard and to ensure that the work continues. And when we receive bad news, we need to bring that vision of the great and awesome Lord back into the picture as soon as possible so that we can then appropriately deal with the bad news and continue with whatever God has for us to continue doing. And all of this adds up to the other way I was talking about. Remember, we start out on a good work, we face some opposition or obstacles, we either give up or we gear up to try to do it all in our own strength. And the other way is simply what Nehemiah did. He trusted God to intervene and he took action himself. He trusted God to intervene and he took action himself. So when verbally intimidated, he cried out to God in prayer and the people kept working. When physically intimidated, he asked God for protection and he set a guard for protection. When receiving the bad news, he reminded people of the Lord and he took steps for them to be able to fight for one another should such a need arise. And this all adds up to you and I being able to use this same approach when we face opposition or obstacles in our lives to the good works that God has for us to do. We can overcome opposition to good work by trusting God and by taking action. And when it comes to good works in our lives, it's not God does it all and we don't do anything, or we do it all and God doesn't do anything. It's a both and. God does his good work, we do our part. And the Christian life, part of the major challenge in the Christian life is figuring out what is God's part, what is our part. And this past week I came across a quote that speaks to this. It comes from a man named Ray Suter, who is a Christian psychologist, and he was speaking to our association pastors last spring about mental health for pastors and congregations during the pandemic. And here's his quote. He says, growth in life and faith comes with accepting what we can do and that we can't do everything. So we must lean into God with what we can't do, or trusting God with what we can't do. So again, here's the quote. Growth in life and faith involves accepting what we can do and that we can't do everything. And then we need to lean into God with what we can't do. And that's what Nehemiah did. With the verbal intimidation, he entrusted to God the defeat of his enemies while he continued to work with the people. With the physical intimidation, he asked God for protection and he set soldiers or workers on guard and armed his workers. So we, when we face bad news, when we face some sort of obstacle to going forward on the good work that God has for us to do, we need to turn to God and trust him to do what he can do. And we need to continue to do the work we can do. And a simple way to remember this comes from Psalm 37, which is full of command about trusting the Lord while you continue on with your life. And a key verse lays it out for us very simply, Psalm 37, verse 3, trust in the Lord and do good. Trust in the Lord and do good. So we share the gospel, God does the saving. We do the praying, God does the healing. We speak truth in love, God does the heart change in the other person. We look for a job, God opens a door. Jesus says, I will be your companion and your friend, but we need to seek him. We trust God and we do good. And all of this starts by trusting God with our whole lives. When it comes to good works that God has called us to do, he does his part, we do our part, but when it came to salvation, it was all him doing the work and we simply doing the trust. And when it came to Jesus going to the cross, he overcame the greatest obstacles and opponents that we could ever face. The obstacle or opponent of sin, the obstacle or opponent of death, the obstacle and the opponent of the enemy, all defeated by God when Jesus went to the cross and died for us. And so as we prepare for communion at this time, I want you to think about what your maybe natural response might be when it comes to opposition to good works in your lives. Do you tend to, as soon as you face opposition, give up? Or do you tend to gear up and try to do it all in your own strength? And as we think about that, maybe we need to confess that to God. As we come to him, God, I tend to give up. Or I tend to try to do it all on my own. But instead, I need to trust you and then do good work. So, as we come to the Lord's table, we read this. For I received from the Lord what I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And in the same way also, he took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For whenever we eat this bread and drink this cup, we proclaim the Lord's death as he comes, until he comes. And so will you prepare your heart as the worship team leads us in the first verse of a song?